The Gambling Files Podcast, the podcast with zero fucks to give. Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files Podcast. This is, depending on what order I launch them in, possibly your third episode this week, maybe your second, possibly the first. I don't know. It's a lottery, really. A little bit like sitting next to me on a long-haul flight. Total lottery. Fenton, hello.
Hello, John.
How are you?
I'm good.
Well, that's great. It's been a while since we've talked.
It feels like ages. But that's just because your jokes are so bad. So
we've been recording podcast episodes all day. So, I'm not going to say we're tired of each other. I don't want to speak for Fenton.
Oh, look, I could listen to myself talk all day, so this is fine.
I can't. I was there for all the stories, so, I haven't even heard any good jokes recently, which is disappointing.
It's one of the things I really miss. When my dad works in construction, so when I was a teenager, every summer or weekend or whatever, I'd work with him. And just the jokes, the level of jokes on a building site are phenomenal. And the storytellers on it, like there's like the storytellers in like the canteen at lunchtime would rival any stand-up comedian of just like commanding a room and just having everybody in absolute tears. And it's definitely something I miss. I don't miss like the porta potties and stuff like that. Like I'm very, very happy. Definitely miss good jokes.
Sorry about the crinkling noise I just made. I just remembered I've got some of my lunch left and it's really good.
Ooh, what have you got?
Meat.
Meat.
I've got a bit of bacon and a bit of sausage left.
Is that lone wolf in you coming out?
Yeah. I think it's part of it. Yeah. Hey, I might, if we don't find a sponsor, I might sell my new bike.
Okay. Wonder Bike number two?
No, that's Wonder Bike 3.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Which is the more recent new bike. Wonder Bike 1 is now owned by my nephew.
That's cool.
Wonder Bike 2 is... selling Wonder Bike 2 would be the last resort. Which could happen, let's be fair. Yeah. Very much could happen. But sometimes you've got to take a chance. You take a chance every morning, Fenton, when you cross the road, when you stick your face in a fan. You take a chance every day.
Yeah.
I was listening to a bit of a motivational speech. I think it was yesterday I was listening to it. And I'm not much of a one for extrinsic motivation, right? In fact, I'm not for it at all. It just does it just makes me laugh generally. But I listened to this speech. It was a graduation speech given by Denzel Washington.
Oh, I've seen that one. It's good.
It was all about, you've got to fail.
Mm.
You've got to not have the fear of failure.
Mm.
It's
the fear that holds you back.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I've certainly not holding back.
Good. Well, look, I've got some insights into what you got planned. I'm very confident. It just needs hard work, and you can do hard work. So.
Yeah. But there'll be more news on what I've got planned, possibly next week.
Ooh.
I know, it's pretty exciting.
We do a special episode where I interview you.
You could. I might have a co-star coming on there.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because then it won't just be me talking bollocks, will it?
That's true.
Because I've been accused of that in the past.
No.
Mm, it's true.
Not you.
I mean, it's true that I've been accused of it. It's not true that I did it.
So, who do we have on the podcast today, John?
That is a great question, Fenton, and I'm glad you asked it. We have Varun. See? Hang on. I've got to sort my sitting out. I'm sorry. I'm just not comfortable. We have Varun Sudhakar. He's the CEO and co-founder of BetDex, and a thoroughly nice gentleman. He's, We had a big chat with him today. The chat, BetDex is I can't remember the expression now.
It's a betting exchange. It's a betting exchange on the blockchain.
Yeah.
It's the other co-founder is Nigel Eccles, who is of one of the co-founders of FanDuel Fame.
And heir to the Eccles cake fortune.
Allegedly. the team are ex-FanDuel key people. And they're doing some cool stuff with a betting exchange on the blockchain. So we kind of dig into the details around that, which is a little bit complicated and definitely beyond my technical levels, but super interesting.
Yeah, you say it's beyond your technical levels, but whoever listens to that is going to notice the entire absence of questions from me until it's time to ask if he watches Cobra Kai.
But that's divide and conquer, mate. Divide and conquer. There's other conversations where, you know, once you start talking about Vegas or land-based casinos, like, what do I know? So it all swings and roundabouts.
It's all good. Swings and roundabouts. Well, on to Varun. And we move to our first guest of this episode. We've done quite a lot of episodes this week, and some of them have overrun when we've been recording them, and we've been horribly, horribly late. If that's happened, we're very sorry. I'm just apologizing to our next guest because we're really, really late in coming onto the recording. But we are joined by Varun Sudhakar, CEO and co-founder of BetDex. Varun, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you are in tune with our other guests in setting the bar low for happiness. I've always said you set the bar nice and low, and you bypass disappointment. And it's the key to happiness.
Always have to set yourself up for success, isn't that right?
Or just not shitting yourself. I think.
Oh, it's a really low bar, then, is it?
Set it really low. But when you know, people ask me in the street, like around here, the traditional greeting is, you're all right. They're not actually asking if you're all right, but it is a great sport to me to act as though they do actually want to know if I'm all right. So I usually say, well, I haven't shit my pants yet. And it's usually followed by a slightly puzzled expression from them. And so then I follow it up with, yet. There's a lot of day to go, and it just needs one errant sneeze. And that's why I'm so popular locally.
So I'm going to be in the UK tomorrow. I'm definitely going to be using that line.
Go for it. And somebody will probably stop you, wherever you are, they'll probably stop you and say, do you know John?
Definitely use his name. Definitely. Oh, they get you into the best restaurants.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But there are certain areas where it'll stop you getting mugged. So, Varun, we've been trying to put this together for a while because, you know, we're always excited to talk to people who are at companies with catchy names. And BetDex is quite catchy, I think. So catchy. I read it and I think, why has nobody else used that before? Did you come up with the name?
It was myself and my co-founder Nigel who both came up with it.
Were you drinking a lot? Methadone? What?
We were at a bar.
Do you know what I mean?
No. It's your classic startup story that we were at a bar. We had an idea. Now here I am.
Yeah, I was licking the cistern clean when we'd run out of cocaine. And the name just came to me. My favorite name just came to me line is in the movie Top Secret, where Val Kilmer's character is talking to a woman in the French resistance in World War II, and he's like, what's your name? I can't remember what the character's name is, but said, oh, what does that mean? She said, oh, the wind that runs free in the mountains. And she says, what's your name? Nick. What does that mean? It's just something my dad thought of while he was shaving. So tell us about BetDex. What's its raison d'etre?
Sure. So BetDex, we started the company about a year ago. So it was myself, two co-founders. So One was, so I'm the CEO. Nigel Eccles is the chairman. He was the founder of FanDuel and CEO for a number of years. And then Stuart Toner is the CTO. So he was actually the first engineer we ever had at FanDuel. I'm ex-FanDuel as well. So we started the company about a year ago. Fast forward now, we're about 25 people. Company's pretty distributed, though largely most of the people are actually in the UK. And basically what we're building is we're building a sports betting exchange, which is called the BetDex Exchange, on the blockchain. So that's been built over the past year. We launched November 24th, so just was like 2 weeks ago. So we launched just in time for just for the World Cup. So
there's a couple of questions. So launching is a betting exchange. That's not for the faint of heart.
No.
What were you hoping to what brought about launching a betting exchange?
Yeah. So I think if you look at the sports betting industry, it's characterized by a number of different, I call it, issues. So one is just the fees are quite high. Anywhere from, I think if you look at like a sports books, they charge anywhere from like 8 to 10%. And then on accumulator bets or parlays, like the rate can get up to, I don't know, call it like 40% even sometimes, right? And the fees are kind of hidden from the user. The user themselves doesn't know a lot of times what the fees are. Two is it's quite difficult for you to withdraw your money from the book because of the way that the whole ecosystem works. All the sportbook operators, they want to take money from losers and they want to limit winners, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you put, and they want you to keep your money within the ecosystem. So when you go and try to withdraw your money, sometimes they may ask you to fill additional forms, et cetera, and then it may take you, 2 to 5 business days for you to get your money back. Or in some cases, if you use like an offshore book, I know I've had this personally, have this experience with Bovada, where they actually mail you this physical check, right? You have to go in cash. And then I think the third issue is just that I alluded to this before, but it's in the ecosystem, given the fact that like they want losers to play in the ecosystem. They don't want people who are winning in the to be on their platform because it's not positive for them in terms of ROI. They will stake limit you, is the industry term, right? So you will get kicked off the platform if you're a smart player. For anyone who's listening who has not been kicked off a platform, I hate to tell you, but that's probably because you're a loser, right? Like you're not that smart of a better, at least as in the eyes of that book. So what we wanted to do was try to fix those issues, and that's why we created the BetDex, which is a sports betting exchange. And the way we've created it, we've built this on top of this open source protocol called Monaco, and it's open source infrastructure, which we can get into. But I think the way we've done it can help potentially alleviate a lot of those problems that I was talking about.
Okay, so if we go back to the business model for an exchange, then so if we look at something like so Betfair is the obvious one, right? So Betfair's been around for what feels like ever, but it's still relatively new. So Betfair has had its ups and downs over the years. But the business model is pretty straightforward, right? So there's a fee for winners and stuff like that. So there's a VIP fee or whatever they call it at Betfair. What's your model for running the exchange? Like, how do you guys pay the bills?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now the exchange, since we just launched a few weeks ago, it's no fees, but we will be eventually charging commission. We haven't disclosed the exact commission rate yet, but it will be lower, and it will be lower than Betfair's. The key difference, though, is we're not going to be charging like a premium charge, which in my mind is a form of like call it stake limiting. And the reason that we're able to do that and someone like Betfair is unable to is, so we're built on top of this open source infrastructure called the Monaco protocol. That protocol can pool liquidity, right, across anyone who's been building on top of that infrastructure. So if you think about it, there's like this infrastructure layer, which is the protocol. It's just on-chain matching algorithm and order book. And then BetDex is one, call it like application or broker, which sits on top of the protocol, right? So we are able to pool liquidity across anyone else who is actually using that protocol or just or building applications, et cetera, on top of it. So if you think about this a world where basically, and this is our vision, like sports betting liquidity is kind of globally pooled instead of these discrete, you know, fragmented pools where it's completely under the control of the operator. That will eventually lead to a place where there's kind of like fee compression and forces people to really compete on product. So that's I think the key difference between what we're doing and what someone like a Betfair is.
Okay, so that's obviously sounds really smart. So you've got this Monaco layer, which multiple apps can be built upon. You can then pull liquidity across, and that would give you a huge advantage. But how does that work? Because obviously you guys, I saw on the website, you guys are licensed out of the Isle of Man, right?
Yes.
So from a licensing, so in a, you know, in a no regulation world, I could absolutely see that working. In a license regulated world, pooling liquidity, how does that work from like a licensing perspective?
Yeah, so the liquidity is, so to be clear, like the actual protocol itself, that's open source and permissionless, right? It's just code. That's not a licensed entity. What is a licensed entity is the application which sits on top. So that's the Betdex exchange. So that's fully licensed and regulated by the Isle of Man. So for us, for anyone who comes in and uses that platform, we have to adhere to any and uses our like the Betdex Exchange app. We have to adhere to any all like kind of KYC, regular course KYC, AML requirements, etc. that are happening on top of that are there, you know, based upon what the Isle of Man says. Sure. The other aspect is it actually, because we're built on chain and kind of all transactions are kind of traceable and, you know, in some ways actually transparent. As it relates to like pooling liquidity and matching it against other players, et cetera, so we were able to get the Isle of Man government comfortable around that concept because their main concern is really for us making sure that we protect all the players who come in under the Isle of Man license. And we want to make sure that, you know, they're not engaging in any, call it, in even an inadvertent manner in any nefarious activity or anything at all like that. And so we have set up a variety of kind of call it protections and tools and procedures in place, which are both Web3 specific because it relates to like analyzing blockchain activity, making sure that there aren't any, isn't any AML, et cetera, like concerns, et cetera, on chain, as well as just regular course KYC, which we have to adhere to.
Sure. And so that's for like everybody on the Betdex exchange. But you talked earlier on about this pooling liquidity across multiple apps. So so funds aren't being mingled or couldn't be mingled then across multiple apps?
Or no, they could.
They could.
They could, right? So like anyone, you can access any funds on the protocol. So you're able to pool liquidity across with any other potential builder who's, you know, on that protocol. It will be up to that builder to be able to get the requisite license for their, call it, depending upon the type of product they're building, the jurisdiction they're operating in,
Sorry, I'm definitely not a crypto expert, but from your perspective as the CEO of Betdex, and so it's not that there's money coming into. So if I place a bet on your exchange, and let's say I win, the funds are only coming from players licensed by you or under your jurisdiction, or could, in theory, could there also be winnings coming to my account from another app?
Yeah, there could be. You could be matched with someone who's acquired someone from you could be matched with someone from another company.
Okay, and you wouldn't have to make sure that, let's say it's a UK. Let's say I'm in the UK, so it's only with other UK licensed apps.
No, what we would need to make sure is that if you were coming in from the Isle of Man license, John was coming in through, call it, another license or unlicensed, what we need to make sure is that John isn't associated with any, call it, illegal criminal activity or anything at all like that, to make sure that we're protecting you under the Isle of Man license.
But you wouldn't be able to do that, though, without KYCing John, though, right?
You could, based upon on-chain activity. So we wouldn't need to KYC John, but we can trace his wallet and look at where he's been interacting with. And so we have obligations as it relates to that.
Sure, but you couldn't do a source of funds.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, there would still be a risk there. You can obviously look at his on-chain transactions, but you don't know, you know, where that Bitcoin came from, or like what the original fiat was behind that Bitcoin or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you could trace it all the way to basically the point of onboarding, right? As to whether it's onto a Binance or formerly FTX, which we can to get into, or another exchange. But we wouldn't know, like, beyond that, where did those funds come from?
Okay. And that's a pretty big, like, I know this is kind of this future pooling and stuff, but that's a fairly big risk though, isn't it? Given, like, when we look at kind of how strict compliance is in a lot of jurisdictions, that becomes a big potential problem. Or do you think Web3 is going to fix all that in the future? Or how do you guys plan to overcome that?
So to be honest, it's an evolving problem, right? I think what we're doing is something that I don't think anyone has kind of done this before. I think the fact that regulation is handled at the application layer is going to be a big, call it deterrent, if you will. And the fact that if you're a builder on the protocol, and the fact that you're going to be the one who's responsible for making sure that you are you're compliant with any KYC AML set of regulations depending upon the type of product that you build, I think is, for us, we believe that is called a good business model. And the onus again is on us to make sure that for all the players that come in who are under our control, under our license, are protected and aren't engaging with any, call it, illicit activity. So we believe we do have the controls, I call it, in place to protect against that. But I mean, I will say, as the ecosystem evolves, like, we may need to evolve as well as it relates to the protection measures that we've put in place.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I can see, you know, I suppose it's always one of these things of, like, there's the theory of the blockchain and then there's the reality of the blockchain. So I think I could absolutely see where you're going, what you're heading towards in terms of building the liquidity. Just having done quite a lot of AML and KYC document providing, I could also see the other issue of, if we can commingle funds, then you're massively exposed as well. So it kind of felt, I think that future bit's definitely something that probably needs a bit more stuff to happen. So let's go back to some of your original points. So you were talking earlier on about being able to cash out and these kind of things. So obviously that is one of the big issues, and it is used as a how would you call it? A dark pattern is probably the best way to describe it. So, you know, cancel your cash out button and being really strict on, like, the quality of the photocopy of your passport or whatever the tricks that some operators use to slow down cash outs. Obviously being on the blockchain is kind of seen as, like, decentralized and pseudo anonymous and these kind of things. But because of the regulation piece, you still need to, like KYC, AML, source of funds, your users. What's that been like in reality in terms of, like, crypto people having to provide documentations? Are they used to it because they've had to do this with any of the legit exchanges, or has there been pushback, or how's that gone?
So there's definitely, it's been a mixture. For us, when we initially launched, there was definitely pushback from a lot of people who were like, this is all about anonymity and being, you know, not having to provide this information. Why are you asking for these documentation, et cetera? Then the other aspect of it is there's been a whole host of users who've also been okay doing so. And, you know, there are people who have been trading on a Binance or a Kraken or a Coinbase, et cetera, where they've already had to provide this documentation and they're happy to kind of, like, do it with us. So it's definitely been, I'll call it, a mixture. For us, if you think about it, like, the reason that we started this company, it wasn't because we wanted to create an anonymous, unregulated, like, exchange. For us, it was more so around, can we do something that can create a truly differentiated user experience for the consumer, right? And we believe that blockchain provided the rails for that. So for us, like, the actual key was more around, like, potential to have like a non-custodial platform with transparent bets, with that you don't need to, that the company doesn't need to actually never hold the player's funds.
What does non-custodial, sorry to for the basic, yeah, yeah. What does non-custodial mean?
So it means that we as BetDex never actually hold your or touch your the player's money. Mm-hmm. So practically, let's say you, Vinton, you place a wager via the BetDex exchange. That gets placed onto this like transparent, auditable smart contract that sits on chain. Once the match settles, assuming that wager is matched, and let's say you win that match, those funds immediately will get remitted directly to you upon once settlement is triggered, right? And so they come directly back to your wallet. You don't need to go to BetDex and ask for a BetDex to return the money to you because BetDex never actually holds the money.
And okay, so to put it in fiat terms, then it's a bit like a escrow account, so to speak. So once the criteria has been met, the funds get released to the winner. And how does the wallet? So the wallet is it's my wallet on your exchange, or what's the wallet process? How does that work?
Yeah, exactly. So you create an account on the BetDex exchange. You put your username, your password, you provide your information. And then you put a wallet. You have to attach a wallet. So it could be on the Solana blockchain, it would be like a Solflare or a Phantom wallet, which you link to that account. And that's the wallet that you can use to wager with.
Got it. Okay.
So yeah, then you're right.
So it's what's the crypto? Like it's my keys on the wallet kind of thing. So yeah. It's okay. I understand. Okay. That's great. Yeah. That makes sense. And then how? So you launched ahead of the World Cup. Obviously, with an exchange, you need liquidity. So that's always a bit tricky. How's the World Cup gone? Did you have to bring in market makers and stuff like that? How did that whole process go?
Yeah, I mean, right now we just launched where I think the first app was building on the protocol, right? So we definitely did bring in. We have external liquidity providers and market makers on the platform. World Cup has gone pretty well over the last few weeks, I think. We've been quite interested. I mean, a few interesting observations. One is, you know, like you spend the whole time you spend thinking about building a startup. You go, you do all these customer interviews, you try to find the pain points, and you keep building. But you never know till you actually launch as to whether you built something which people actually want until you see money kind of transacting to the platform, right? So that has been a fulfilling moment, I'd say, to finally get to launch and see actual real liquidity being put on the protocol by users who come in and log in, not just institutional market makers. So that's been great to see that there clearly is like a need for the product. We've seen what's been interesting, our most traded markets has been like the both teams to score markets versus like the match winner markets, which I wouldn't have originally honestly had made that prediction, but across the board, that's been like our most traded market. I think, and which is just an interesting call it observation, and obviously just given the Isle of Man license and the jurisdictions we're operating in, a lot of the volume that we're seeing is coming from international jurisdictions. So areas such as Asia or South America, it's where a lot of the volume is coming from. Honestly, like some of that does coincide with the teams which are playing in the World Cup as well. So
got it, and. So two more questions. So what's the currency for the exchange? Is it like a stable coin? Like how does currency work on the exchange?
Yeah, it's a stable coin. So all our markets are running USDT.
Okay.
So yeah.
So that's Tether, is it?
Tether, yes.
Got it. Okay. So then you don't have the fluctuations of if you're betting in Bitcoin or betting in Ethereum of like the values changing massively. And then I think just the other thing on exchanges. So if we look at one of the big criticisms for Betfair for the year over the years has been the user interface, and that it's quite confused. Like for the average punter who wants to stick $10 or £10 on their their team to win, the Betfair exchange is a bit of a there's a steep learning curve and these kind of things. Given you're kind of coming at this with very fresh eyes and a huge pedigree with the FanDuel experience and stuff. How have you guys tackled the interface and kind of maybe making it easier for people who aren't hardcore punters?
Yeah, so I think towards, I just talk about like target market and who we're going after. Given the fact that called the Web3 itself and the blockchain and onboarding journey, et cetera, is so early on and in kind of like the ecosystem, the people we are going after initially are people who are native, or like who already use crypto, right? It's people who already use crypto. They know what a self-custodial wallet means. Don't really need a whole lot of education to tell them this is how you go and buy crypto, for example. And a lot of these people are actually people who trade already on places such as a Binance or a Kraken or something like that. So given that target market, I mean, I think our UE does look call a lot better than Betfair, but it does have back and lay bets, right? Because that's the people that we're going after initially. It's people who are, I'll call it for lack of a better word, but for crypto world, like degens, right? People who trading NFTs.
I think from a licensing perspective, you're not allowed to say that.
Say that? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hopefully the regulators don't listen to this one, but that's the people we're going after, is people who are familiar with the ecosystem. Next year, as we continue to kind of penetrate and go more and more mass market, we are developing a simpler product, right? Where it'll be like kind of like a one-click bet for you. So if you want to go and place a wager, that's going to be geared much more towards mass market. So the way I would describe it is like almost like Coinbase and Coinbase Pro, which I think they've now combined into one platform. But if you remember when they used to have it was like professional trading interface, and then there was like one, like, and then Coinbase itself was just a very simple, pretty GUI where you can make a trade with just a few clicks. So
yeah, okay, that look makes perfect sense. You've got to start somewhere, right? And it's better to target the people who understand it first and then expand out. So that leads on to a nice kind of follow-up question. So what are the plans? Like, I'm sure you've got a big roadmap full of stuff, a billion things to do. So what's next on the list, and what have you got guys lined up for the year?
Yeah, so right now we just launched with launched with a small subset of markets, right? It's just pretty much only markets just for the World Cup. Next year, a few different focus areas. So on the product side, in-play is going to be a big one. It's one that we're going to need to get out next year. And I'm sure you probably noticed we're like over 50% of trading volumes occurring on in-play right now. So it's been one of the most requested features by our users as well. Second one is going to be just in terms of sport coverage. So right now it's just soccer/football only. And in fact, just World Cup only. So you'll see in the next few weeks, we'll be launching a few additional leagues, et cetera, within soccer, but we do want to expand beyond that. So some of the sports we're looking at, cricket, tennis, golf, NBA, et cetera, all kind of in our consideration set right now. And then third is also on the licensing front. So I think the Isle of Man license allows us to, you know, attract about probably 40% of the world, reach 40% of the world's population. But we want to bring this product to more people. So there are efforts underway to get additional licenses in other jurisdictions as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic. That's really cool. And just trying to think what else.
Fenton.
Yeah.
The question you're looking for is, have you watched Cobra Kai?
Oh man, I unfortunately hate to say this, but I have not.
Oh, we'd highly recommend it.
Yes, yeah, it's terrific. But you know, Varun, maybe you're too young to appreciate it. I don't know.
Maybe I'll give it.
Have you seen the original Karate Kid movies?
Yes.
Okay, then you're in with a chance.
I'll tell you what, John. I'll give it a go on my flight tonight. How about that?
Look, if it's on there, season one and two are just fabulous. Yeah, but it's not a spoiler if I say what the point of it is, Fintan. I know you think
it isn't. You can set it up.
It subverts the original sort of setup.
Yeah,
and Daniel is the villain. And Johnny is the hero.
Okay.
And that's where the genius lies, because Johnny is just such a fucking waste of carbon. It's fabulous. But it's very good. But, you know, I think what that tells us, and tells anybody listening and any potential investors, is that you don't do anything other than work.
He's been too busy. Yeah.
Too busy. It's startup fever. Have you seen any, I don't know whether this is something you would actually be aware of at your, you know, in the cloud stratospheric level, but betting patterns in the World Cup, has there been anything that sort of surprised you? And, you know, presumably if but your conversation got very technical there, so I may have slept. can anybody in the world place a bet on BetDex, or does it depend where your ass is actually located?
It depends on where you're located.
Okay. Have you seen any interesting betting patterns? Because it's been the freakiest World Cup for results.
It's been a weird one. So for us, I think, as I mentioned before, like one thing is like our most common markets have just been like the both teams to score market. It's been getting even considerably more volume than the over-under, but even more volume than the match winner markets. And I think that that's because, and this is just a theory, a lot of the people betting on the World Cup, some of them may be more casual. They may not want to bet on a three outcome market. You know, they look at it and they're like, I'd rather just bet on something which is a bit simpler, which is, are both teams going to score or not? That's been quite, I mean, which is an interesting observation. We've seen that on our platform.
But as a tournament, it's been hardly any nil-nils. I think I can only think of one off the top of my head, two. Which is really, really unusual in the World Cup. So, yeah, betting not on a nil-nil, I don't know, fuck. But it's so like pre-tour, I always bet on stupid shit during the World Cup.
Do you? Yeah.
Small bets, usually. I nearly always bet on Mexico to win, but I didn't do that this time because they just looked shite. But what I've been saying for months, this tournament is going to be wide open. It is anybody's. And that is exactly what it's proving to be.
So that's, go ahead.
I've been saying to friends, not only is this tournament anybody's, but I think an African team is going to do really well. And I actually bet on Ghana to finish in the top four. And I got someone like 300 to one on that. They're the lowest ranked team in the tournament. I wouldn't fancy playing them. Those guys can play. And, you know, they didn't live up to expectations. Some of the players are maybe
older than they were. So Ghana was actually my favorite team. It's one of the teams I bet on as well. So funny story here is when we launched BetDex last year, and then we first got to the point where we were testing the platform, I think that was in the earliest test we did, I believe was like in Q1 or Q2 of last year, of this year. We tested internally at the Ghanaian Premier League. So that was the first like teams or match that we ever had on the platform, obviously just internal testing with fake money. So since then, Ghana holds a special place in everyone at BetDex's heart. So.
Well, they held one in mine until they fucking got it all wrong. But amazing that Morocco are in the semis, and that's a fantastic story from the tournament.
I don't think any African team has ever gotten that far
before. They haven't. Several have made the quarterfinals, but nobody's ever made the semifinal. And like I say, it's absolutely wide open. This is anybody. So nobody's like saying Argentina, France, but you know, everybody was also saying Brazil. And look what happened there. This is anybody's. And I think it's really interesting. With so many absolutely freakish results. I mean, Saudi Arabia is one of the great World Cup shocks. Even Morocco, Portugal, and Morocco, Spain. You know, these are huge, huge, almost seismic results. And we've seen some wonderful, wonderful football played. But I do wonder what effect, not just in this tournament, it's going to have on betting, but in future tournaments it's going to have on betting, because the sports landscape has changed and people have invested in grassroots and players play abroad and they're at a higher standard and the way that scouting is done is completely different. And it's just, And also the timing of this tournament is bizarre. Because if it comes at the end of a Premier League season, a successful Premier League club in the UK has played 60 games, which, you know, people are like, yeah, well, if I was being paid £3 million a month, I could play 60 games. No, you fucking couldn't. Because we're talking about playing 60 games at breakneck speed at the highest possible level. If you're lucky, you don't get injured. It's not easy.
Well, you just buy the really good drugs, right?
Fenton, that is so negative.
So cycling gets a bad rap. And obviously there's a lot of doping in cycling. But it's always amazing that like soccer or tennis or any of these sports where it's high impact, massive cardio, recovery is really important, just as important as cycling. There's never been an EPO scandal or anything, it seems a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a separate discussion around this, which is around like, even like you look at like, you know, like tournament organizers such as FIFA, et cetera, and like, you know, potentially there's been a lot of allegations of that they're not completely caught above the board as well, which may play some part around.
Wasn't it Rio Ferdinand that missed 3 drug tests? No, I think Rio Ferdinand missed 3 drug tests, and it's like, 1, fair enough. 2, I guess it could happen. 3, you're hiding.
Yeah.
Not dissing Rio Ferdinand, but fuck it, 3 times. Come on, Rio. With your fancy name. So BetDex is live and people are using it. Are you any closer to retiring?
No, not really. We got a long ways to go, but it's an important milestone to achieve getting this far. So.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess it'd be interesting to see what kind of volumes we're talking about when it's the end of January, isn't it? A Super Bowl?
Mid-Feb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I believe that's considered an important game in some countries.
It is.
Yeah, I'm not sure what countries those are. Just get loads of people watching it in the UK, actually. Loads and loads of people. Mostly, I think, exiled Americans.
No, it's a lot of people. But there's always a thing now where, particularly during NFL season, I don't book any meetings with half my team before, like on a Monday. It's just, there's no point. They've been up all night punting the NFL. So it's better to talk to them like after 3 on a Monday, or Tuesday's even better.
My brother explained the game to me once. So my brother lives in the States. And you know, I was, as Europeans do, just dissing it. And he's like, well, no. It's this. It's not what you think it is. It's this. And he explained it to me. I'm like, that's quite clever. And then I forgot what he said. So deep down in my heart, I know that it's a good and positive thing, but I just, you know,
I just can't
hold it in my head what it is. I've got too much football in there.
Just need to watch more games.
Have either of you been to any of the games that like the NFL games is in Wembley that they hold every year?
No, they sell out really fast. They're really, really popular.
My sister, my brother-in-law went to there was a game in Dublin. So I think it was Navy versus somebody or something like that recently.
It was Nebraska, wasn't it? Nebraska, the college football game?
Yeah, it was something like that. And the credit card, the payment machines for the bars and the food broke.
No.
So it became a free, the organizer's just free bar.
Yeah.
So my brother-in-law is like just this biggest NFL fan. So I've been able to just go watch a game live with a free bar and then a weekend in Dublin. It was just his perfect, like it couldn't have been better for him. And he was sending me pictures. He was just the happiest guy in the world.
I think he might be moving to Dublin. So
I think he might. My mum would be very happy about that. Yeah. it was a very good experience.
That's beautiful.
It's really cool. I think they handle it because the easy thing to do would be just shut the bars, but to just make it free drinks and just get on with it and just give everyone a good time, I think was the absolutely right response.
I was at a wedding once, right? It's quite a long time ago. It's back when I was drinking quite heavily. And I go up to the bar and I'm like, can I have, I think they had Corona or something behind the bar, and it was, you know, it's pretty nice. And they had, I think, one lager on tap. It was just quite a small hotel this was at. And they were like, no, I'm sorry. That's funny. Give me the beer. And I, we can't, we've had to throw it all out. It's fucking bottled beer. And he's, but apparently they knew that the wedding was booked months before, and nobody had checked the expiration dates on the beer. And all the beer that they were due to sell in the bar had gone out of date, including the, they had no lager for sale. That is cruel and unusual punishment, as any Irishman would say in this situation. But how will we fight now?
John, you're better than that. You're better than that, John.
Well, I wasn't.
Clearly.
But it was a lovely wedding. There was a magician there. He was good. Yeah, that's all I remember, really. And I was sober for most of it. Gutted. Sorry. So anyway, what were we talking about? Oh yeah, Bet Dex. It's a catchy name. I like it.
Thank you.
And it probably doesn't get shortened on the stock exchange.
I hope not.
Bet Dex in brackets, Bet Dex.
That'd be handy. I think we need to wrap up.
Yeah, okay. God, so grown up.
Sorry. Well, I know our guest has got a time limit, so
he's a very busy and important person.
And we did leave him waiting, so I think we should.
And you, Fenton, you are also a busy and important person.
I also have a call, but that's different.
I'm just going to probably go sit in my armchair for a bit.
Nice. Good for you.
Because I'm unemployable. And we have no sponsors. So anyway, one last question. Sure. Varun, do you want to sponsor the podcast? So yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, brilliant. Fenton, I've sorted out a new sponsor for the podcast.
Great. I'll set up our wallet. We'll sort that out.
Brilliant. Varun, thank you very much for joining us. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Great to meet both of you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.